We understand you can't listen to all 4 hours of the show. That's why we have Scheman and Shepherd on demand. Download us whenever at 993ESPN.com or on iTunes. This is Scheman and Shepherd on 993ESPN.
Scheman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app on a Thursday.
Crack this up.
Oh, this is good.
No time left for
what's good.
On my way to better things.
Oh, listen to me go.
Now you ruined it.
I did both
ruined
parts.
Our day.
I did both parts.
Brutal.
I love at the end of the song.
No time.
Oh. No time for Craig's stupid thoughts.
What? No time for your horrible singing. We are going to talk to Rick Haro, our sports business guru, in just a little bit. We're watching the U.S. Open. Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, and Luis Oosthuizen, all 5 under 66s today. In fact, I think there are, last count, 24 players under par right now. And by the way, Tiger hasn't even teed off yet with Jordan Spieth. But this is on pace to be the lowest first round ever in the history of the U.S. Open. So you got all these players complaining about U.S. Open conditions, and I think they capitulated the wrong way.
In the words of my good friend Dave, who lives around the corner from me, I don't like it. I don't like it. And this is, and I hope they give him the worst pin placement on the planet tomorrow, and let's get back to reality here.
It's too easy.
This is ridiculous.
I mean,
so all the moaning and crying and complaining, kvetching, working, like Jeff said,
Jeff Nixon
was just here. That'll change tomorrow.
It should be. It should be some difficult pitch.
I don't like it.
Because it looks, I mean, it's just.
I want part of me something.
It's been damp. It's been cloudy. It's been foggy. So, I mean, the course is soft, which allows for scoring. But, I mean, year after year. I mean, Phil Mickelson was starting to complain about U.S. GA conditions weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and listen, last year was tough for everybody but Brooks Koepka, who said, so what? Just play better. And I don't know. It seems like it's too easy today.
I think so. I think it'll be changing tomorrow. How about this? Zion Williamson is suing to enforce his termination of an agreement he signed with a Florida marketing company, maintaining their deal was unlawful under North Carolina law. He's set to become, and we'll get into that, but that's something that's just breaking now from Adrian Wojnarowski.
All right, let's talk to our sports business guru, a friend of the program, Rick Haro, who's with us each and every Thursday. As I see Tiger walking out toward the tee, getting ready to tee up. Rick, are you at Pebble Beach? Where are you nowadays?
I will be. I had a meeting in Baltimore with the Cal Ripken Foundation board, went on a tour of all of his facilities. Then I'm either going to take a sharp stick and gouge my eye out or go to the Blue Jays Orioles tonight. I'm not sure which is worse. I'll be there tomorrow.
All right. Well, if you're going to Camden Yards tonight, which is still a lovely area, I still like it down by the Inner Harbor, but are you sitting with Peter Angelos? Are you sitting, what are the accommodations? What is the incentive for you to go?
Spent the day with Cal Ripken. I'm doing a couple of TV things. And I decided to kind of, I've been around a lot of people, been jostled by crowds and stuff. So I decided to be by myself and wear better than an Oriole.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess if you hang around with Cal Ripken all day, you're almost obligated to go see an Orioles game at the end of the day.
But you know what? Seriously, though, he must be pissed the way what has happened to the organization, right? I mean, he can't be happy.
Yeah, well, you know, he's above all that. It's hard to engage in that. It's just one of those things you kind of know.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is that this is one of those situations where you see Derek Jeter. I'm not going to say it on his behalf because he's, again, he's above all this, but you see, you know, Derek Jeter running and in control of a team that he has no legacy with in Miami, and that team's not doing well. And then, you know, Cal is Baltimore. Cal Ripken Way is the street that heads into Camden Yards, and his foundation, on behalf of his dad, has done 85 fields and helped 1.5 million kids. And so that's the board that I'm on. And the point is, he's way beyond and better than being in a position of being associated with team that, you know, you count arms and legs and you'll come up with 2,500 tonight.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Rick Harrell's with us. With the golf at the U.S. Open that's going on with the 119th U.S. Open, Fox has been doing this since, what, 2015? Every year they kind of have a little bit of new technology, a little new bell, new whistle with their broadcast. Anything new that I can expect other than Joe Buck droning on over the background of the broadcast this weekend?
Yeah, you and I agree on that, by the way. But, all right, so we have swing speed, ball speed, smash factor, and their new ways to measure carry distance. Now, you know, for me, I'll rely on a worm burner with overspin, so carry distance doesn't really help. So it's like, it's great to see the pros do it, but then you confirm how you're not capable of this. And the courses are playing fairly benign, judging by the early scores. So,
yes.
You know, my street mate, Ricky Fowler, is tied for the lead, which, by the way, that would make some dramatic viewing independent of what Tiger does.
And we were talking about how easy the course seems to be today. I don't know, the weather has something to do with it. The greens are soft, but I got to imagine that this is going to change. This is a record pace here for under par scores, Rick, and I don't like it. I don't like seeing this tournament where it's this easy right now. It should never be this easy, but the moaning and bitching and kvetching that these guys have done the last few years, at least for this round anyway, has gotten to the USGA officials, because this is playing like, just your average everyday course, guys, at 5-under. It's ridiculous. I don't like it.
Well, and let's remember, you know, the first 3 days, it was Koepka and then everybody else.
Yeah.
Remember the first 3 days in eastern Long Island, we're kind of almost the same way until the weather took over. So I'm hoping there is global warming changes the world in the next 2 days, and it's the mother of all tornadoes. It floods the place, and then at the end of the day, you know, you have to end up playing and continuing. It ain't happening, but we can always hope.
Yeah. Rick, talk me through your thoughts of Kevin Durant, the irony of the injury with his pending free agency. I mean, the NBA changed overnight with that injury. At least I think it did. Mm-hmm. But then there might still be some teams willing to pony up almost $250 million for this guy, even though he can't play next year.
$250 million. What does he do concerning the dead year? It's his option. So does he use it and sit and, you know, charge the Warriors with those dollars? You know, I don't know. I mean, I would think that the part of the deal would be wrapped into some huge package and then a trade as part of the overall deal. But it's changing the NBA overnight. You hear all of these stories about, you know, the Achilles and what's going to happen. The end of the day, did he risk? Did he play? You know, should he have played? What about the team doctors? You know, nobody knows the advice that he got, and the doctors are not going to start talking about what he was privately told the day of. But I would say that, you know, injuries are a part of the game. But at this level, this is something that nobody had assumed. And, you know, the character of what he was going through is incredible, and especially the perspective of what the Warriors did at the end of that game, although you could say that the Raptors gave it away. Hard to believe the Warriors could actually win two more without KD, but, you know, you never know. I guess that's why you watch.
Well, if you were his agent, what would you advise him to do? To opt to take the $31 million and then, you know, go for the big money? Or, as we know, you can get the – if somebody like Dolan, who I would imagine would still chalk up the $256 million max, or does he go for the 4-year, $146 million? I mean, what would your advice to him be if you were his agent?
Well, again, a lot of it depends really on how the doctors would give him some real comfort as to does he play at all this year? Probably not. Obviously.
No, I think that's been confirmed. No. That'll be confirmed by the end of the day that he will not be able to play at all next year. So
I
taking that
right.
into account.
So I think we're, yeah. You know, so at the end of the day, the obvious answer, too, is, you know, with the TV dollars and the effect of the cap, you know, what is that going to mean as far as 2021, 2022 season? And, you know, he has the money in hand, and that's part of his negotiation. That's his business. And so, you know, the more interesting thing to me is, What do the Warriors do, and he does, relative to next year too? And I can't give you an answer because I don't know yet. I would hate to see him end up in a Knick uniform, because the Knicks are a place on the way to hell.
Did you see the New York Daily News front page today? I don't know if you saw it. It just had a picture.
No, did it have his picture?
It had a picture of Durant, you know, holding his ankle, and it said, Knicks lose game five.
The Knicks.
That's pretty funny. There you go. See, that's why you don't go to New York, right?
Right.
That's a good example of why you end up in the, you know, maybe he goes back to Oklahoma City and plays on one leg. Mm-hmm. How about that?
By the way, Tigers just popped his first drive on number one.
Great shot.
Right down the middle. Mm-hmm. Right down the middle. A nice iron shot. Tonight is the last of the last, finally, at the Oracle. I mean, we've been hearing last conference game, last play, regular season game, last first round playoff. Finally tonight, no matter what happens, it'll be the last of the last. And I think tickets are going for about, I don't know, what's
12? Yeah, a lot of money. But Rick, have you been? I'm sure you have. Have you been to the Oracle? Are you in
close to the
ownership there?
Yeah. Listen, in the Rick Barry underhanded free throw days, what are you talking about? I mean, I was there when the basket was 8 feet tall. That building will be a testament to the city of Oakland and how they continue to lose assets.
Yeah.
I know the Raiders will. You know, they kind of got a good gift of an extra year there, but they'll be gone. The A's, unless they can come up with something, they'll be gone. And, you know, the city of Oakland, which is basically a fairly small city on the contiguous to a big one on the other side of the bay, will very soon go from three sports franchises to, unless they watch themselves, none.
Mm. Yeah, that's incredible. That really is. How about your thoughts last night on the St. Louis Blues finally winning their first championship ever? I'm sorry, Pete Shepard's Boston Bruins could not get it done in Game 7, but I'm really not that sorry because I didn't want to see yet another parade in Boston, although you might have liked to, so you can go on over to Harvard again, but, you know.
I'll go to Harvard on my own. Don't tell me what to do. I can figure out my own deal. All right. You got to worry about Shepard because the last time I checked, you know, he had no neck and he's stronger than you. So you know, you got to make sure that you guys are in some harmony, okay? So I feel sorry for all of my Boston Bruins fans because, you know, they had the opportunity in St. Louis to step on it, win it at home. They realize what it's like when you take things for granted. And then I think the Bruins should have realized the same thing. And you watch, it's not just Binnington who is amazing, but you watch the Bruins after that first goal. And it's like, oh, my God, we're at home, we're down, we're pressing too hard. And I know this is a loss that'll live with them for a year or two or more. And everybody says, what a wonderful year to get here. Who cares? I mean, you get there, you either win or you don't. And they didn't win. But good for St. Louis because they have nothing to look forward to in the center of the country, and this helps. They lose their football team. Their baseball team is going to get slammed by the Cubs. They are in Tornado Alley, so they deserve a break.
Okay. All right.
Well, but I do think Binnington deserved a little bit more of the Conn Smythe Trophy than Ryan O'Reilly.
I agree.
He was a man. Kind of, they're being outshot 15-5 in the second period, and the Bruins were totally dominating. He did what Tim Thomas did to Vancouver in 2011, almost the exact same scenario.
By the way, that's a very fair comment, and it is hard to imagine I guess Binnington was evaluated based on, you know, a couple of games, and O'Reilly had the more scoring than anybody could have imagined. So you see that as well. But I was kind of surprised at that. If there were ever a year where mathematically you could work it out as Conn Smythe trophy winners, this would have been it.
Yeah, I agree.
Rick Haro is with us, our Sports Business Insider. All right, let's talk about women's sports for a moment because we sure enjoyed that 13-0 blowout of the
No,
women's...
we didn't. Craig yelled obnoxiously it. Goal every – I mean, just trying to be Enos Kanter.
Wait.
It was
Shepard,
awful.
Did you think that the Americans should have taken their foot off the gas?
No.
What are you saying? You're not a boss. I mean, Bostonians don't think that way. If we're 20, it should have been 20. If we're 30, now I had the U.S. and I gave 12, so I was okay.
Well, I gave 5. I took the plus 5.5 like a knucklehead.
That was over early, man. No, you were dead. You were dead with like 44 minutes left.
No, I have no problem with that at all. I think some people had a problem with maybe the excessive celebrations, maybe after it was like 7-0. But other than that, you know, you're trying to score goals. What are they supposed to do? Stand out there at half pitch and do nothing? And
Well, and also big countries are on earth to pound smaller countries and to celebrate.
That's
right?
Good.
And that's, you know, what are they supposed to do, right?
But you know, Rick, the funny thing about the – because when the, as it was going on, and Chris had given me who Thailand had beaten or lost to the last four games, and they're relatively close in women's soccer. France 4-1. Nothing was, you know, overly dramatic. Then after that game, I go, you got to look up and see, how did they qualify? Who did they beat? They beat Indonesia 13-0 to get in. So how bad is Indonesia? And then we find out that Thailand's ranked 34th in the world. So they're actually countries worse than Thailand.
Yeah, I understand. And frankly, I think the next game, if we really want to feel good about ourselves, then we ought to schedule a friendly against Indonesia and beat them like 40-0.
I don't know how good Chile is, but...
Yeah, well, we'll find out.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. But, you know, the point was exactly right. The goal differential, mm-hmm. you know, what would have happened if you looked at it and we saw that, you know, Sweden had beaten, Thailand ultimately, yeah. you know, it's 15-0. So mm-hmm. it's like, why didn't we do it? So nobody should have any trouble with anybody celebrating. You know, that's what you do in school when you know, you see somebody drop a pencil and, you know, you kick them and then you celebrate, right?
Wow.
I mean, that's the
you
deal.
Are a bully.
And, well, plus in the World Cup, you know, goals count. That's a tiebreaker rule.
Goal differential.
So
exactly.
This is what it is.
Well,
right.
But to my original point, you know, women's sports, we're interested in the women's soccer team much more than the men's. The LPGA seems to be on the rise. We got a big kick out of watching the Women's College World Series and UCLA and all that. Now, the WNBA just seems like it will never catch on. But overall... seems like there's a market for women's sports.
Well, but here's the thing, and we'll see in July 8th and beyond, and it's a classic argument. Do we like this because this is a one-off international event, or do we like it because we're sponsoring women's sports? Now, when you take a look at the numbers, obviously the ad money for this is well ahead of projections. Fox was talking in 2015 about $40 million in ad sales, projected $17 million. They're talking about 10 to 14% more than that this year. So we understand how valuable it is to see the American success story here, plus, you know, women succeeding on the pitch against the world's best. But let's see if it translates into, you know, ongoing sponsorship. I certainly hope so. Yeah. We all do.
Yeah. Well, certainly the women's World Cup team, they're better than the men. I don't know if the men can beat anybody lately. They can't lose to Jamaica. They lose to Venezuela. I don't know what's going to happen with them, but certainly I think the U.S. women's soccer team, you can make a case that they should be paid as much as the men. Right now, I think they're a lot more popular. They're the number one team in the world, and you can make a case. The hockey players have already, a lot of them already reneged on that little argument we had. They said about a month ago, a lot of them were like, no, what is this? We're just going to go back to our teams and keep our mouths shut. There's nothing really, we're never going to make anything close to NHL money. But Women's World Cup soccer may have a case.
Well, look, the 2015 amount for the Women's World Cup, a prize fund, was half of what it is today. $30 million with the winners getting four. Well, again, not enough, but it's double. Now, contrast that, the men's side, $400 million for the 2018 World Cup, and the winner getting 38 versus four. So it's not even close, and FIFA... you know, I guess you could argue is moving in the right direction, but the disparity was so much to begin with. You know, unlike the tennis majors where they're paid equally, golf majors where they're both moving in the right direction, and you see the difference.
Rick, you being a lawyer, I have a lawyer question for you. I saw that the Iowa Cubs minor league team, they're going to go ahead and increase the netting around the baseball field and try and avoid any future problems with foul balls and injuring fans. Are you comfortable as a lawyer with the writing on the back of a ticket that relieves blame and liability just because it's printed on the back of the ticket that you're there at your own risk? Is that strong enough to hold up and keep teams from getting sued if people start getting killed from foul balls?
No. Now, after I paid back my student loans, I was thinking of what did I actually learn substantially at Harvard, and it wasn't much. But one of the things that I realized is that one of the classic things in tort law is that there's called something called assumption of risk. This is a good case, back of a ticket. You don't assume the risk of gross negligence. So that means that if you do something that's really bad, then you say, you know, we do something that's really bad, and you see it anyway, and we can write that we're not liable, therefore we're not liable. It doesn't work that way. So, you know, as far as the netting is concerned, if you're making some reasonable efforts to change things around after you see something, even if it's a freak injury, you can be sued. I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of liability to it, but everybody looks like they're trying to figure out how to solve this. But by the way, it is structural in a lot of places. So they're going to start doing something next year. The Iowa Cubs did it now. Kudos to them. But they've got to figure out a solution that'll improve on today. And there are a lot of, you can't just take Band-Aids and scotch tape and move the nets around. In a lot of these places, you got to change kind of the structures of these big poles where the nets are. So they'll do some things. It just doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah. And then just to piggyback on that a second, as far as, you know, places that have signs that says we are not responsible for lost items, is that, that you can fight that in a court of law and win, can't you?
Yeah, and by the way, if you buy a ski lift ticket, and you know the ski lift kind of falls off of the thing and hurts you, just because of the back of the ski lift ticket, you say you assume all risks. Well, this is not one of those normal risks.
Yeah.
So the answer is you assume certain ones, and you don't assume other ones, and this is not one of those that you assume. So the invoice is coming. It's to both of you. It'll be based on ability to pay, so I'm not wasting my time.
Is that $450 an hour?
I'm not sending you anything because I don't want to, you know, see what happens when you try to go into your pocket and you see nothing.
On that note, tell Cal Ripken I said hello, and we will speak to you next week. Thank you.
Have fun, Rick.
Wow.
All righty.
Thank you. That was
by the way, Tiger Woods missed a birdie putt on one by a dimple. And it was literally like in scene in Caddyshack at the end. If there was an explosion, it would have gone in. And then Adam Scott just made a 21-footer, right? A 24-footer.
Yes.
Was that in the first hole, too?
Not Scott. I don't know. Now, Tigers, by the way, that was a 24-footer that missed by a dimple. I did notice that when Scott was putting, his pants were flapping. So I think the breeze is picking up a little bit here late in the afternoon. So Tiger pars the first hole. We missed a big birdie opportunity there. All right, we'll continue. We'll keep our eye on the U.S. Open. We've got ourselves a Game 6 in the NBA Finals tonight as we continue. Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Radio Tinder.
I bet you'd swipe right on this show. This is Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app on a Thursday.
Love this song.
It's a good tune.
Santana.
Santana.
Yep.
Saw him perform this live pregame before the Super Bowl in San Diego. Super Bowl 37?
Buccaneers. Bucks crushing the Raiders. Yep.
Exactly.
I didn't stay for the game, that one. I flew home.
That one I stayed and enjoyed it.
It's when my plane had a little electrical issue, and the cabin filled up with smoke, and we landed in Pittsburgh. It turned out to be really nothing, but it looked horrible at the time.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
First time in my life was I was really, really scared on a plane, but...
That was the one Super Bowl I did not fly. In fact, I lived in L.A. I just got in my car after the game and drove home.
I left Saturday.
Yeah, not too bad. Rick Church on the other side of the glass. Chris out today and tomorrow. Keeping an eye on the U.S. Open. Again, it's West Coast people, so you can come home from work, crack open a beer, and watch golf tonight, tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be, in fact, on the weekend or tonight?
It switches from FS1 to Fox at 7:30 to 10:30 tonight and tomorrow. And then the Saturday, it's on Fox from 2 until 10 p.m., and I believe – oh, no, that's Sunday. Sunday, 2 to 10. Saturday is like 12 to 7, I think, something like that.
It's shaping up to be a pretty awesome Father's Day weekend. In fact, Sunday, I'm looking at – obviously, we're going to have to root for Golden State tonight so that we have a Game 7 on Sunday. You watch NBA Finals Game 7. You'd have the U.S. Open going on. There was another thing going on. Oh, if you want to watch the women's soccer for World Cup against Chile on Sunday. I think you mentioned Florida State plays Saturday.
Florida State plays Saturday night against Arkansas. Yes, and I think you got to be rooting for them. That's just for Coach Martin, my God. It's such a great – I hope they can piggyback off of what they did to LSU. But it's tough. All those teams left are all real good. How about Michigan? Michigan was the last team to get in.
Yeah.
One of the last three teams to get in, and there they are in the World Series.
Go Wolverines.
No.
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 It's all about Harbaugh.
Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, and Luis Oosthuizen, all 66, is 5-under out at the U.S. Open. Brooks Koepka, he's a very his Nike hat is very floral, I should say.
It's almost
very feminine.
No,
with all of his muscles.
Oh, there's like one little pink spot. You're so like.
I'm looking at all these little flowers.
Would
and
you
birdies
wear? You wouldn't
there.
Wear a purple. I have a nice purple. You a nice purple.
I could pull it off.
Yep. But you don't have one, do you? You wouldn't wear a burgundy or a pink or
I like
a pinkish hue.
I like purple
or a
very
purple
much.
Shirt. You're not comfortable with that.
I am. Kepka
no,
just
not.
Nailed an 11-footer for a birdie. He's now 2-under. That's on the third hole. So he's 3 holes done.
God, birdie, under. Par birdie.
Tiger Woods.
What the hell is he going to shoot? 11-under? What if that happens?
Tiger Woods is even. He's on his second. This is his third shot on a par 4, and he's out a little bit.
And this is going to be a
left.
Very good shot.
A little bit spin back.
15 feet for to save par.
It's a save par. See, that's not good.
I didn't see his tee shot, so obviously it couldn't have been good because he didn't have a good approach shot on the second shot.
Fact.
So.
Jordan Spieth, I believe, is also
what if Koepka shot like 10-under today?
It's not out
then
of the realm
to,
of
then
possibility.
Then they stop the tournament and redesign the course for the rest of the day, or the rest of the tournament.
Do something.
Oh! Reavy was going for the 3-under, and it literally circled the hole and rimmed out.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Poor little Reavy.
So this is great. So tonight's a little preview to the Father's Day. Tonight we can do the double dip with the U.S. Open and the NBA. Forget about waiting for Sunday. I'm doing it tonight.
And we're carrying the game right here on 99.3 ESPN.
I believe pregame's at 8.
Yes. And we'll have golf coverage all weekend long, I believe, as well.
Yes.
Right here.
All right. Well, and regarding tonight's game in the NBA, Game 6, again, I think mental toughness and emotions are going to play big in tonight's game, more so than any, I think, on both sides. I think, does Toronto bounce back from the – it was a pretty good collapse in the last 3 minutes there to lose by one. They had that thing wrapped up. They thought it was good. They were going to win the Nick Nurse timeout. Kawhi Leonard taking the team on his back, scoring like, 10 unanswered points before that timeout. And then on the other side, the Golden State Warriors, the emotions of losing Kevin Durant. Now they've had a couple days to digest it. They now know he will not be back. But, I mean, they wanted to celebrate a win saving their season, but they really were so subdued. I mean, it was a bizarre mental scene after that game yesterday. I don't know where their head is. Certainly coming home that last game at Oracle, that crowd will charge them up. There's no doubt about that. But will they be able to sustain them in whatever state they're in for the full 4 quarters? I don't know.
Golden State jumps out to a lead. Toronto makes a mini comeback. But I think Golden State wins this one by about 5. I think the line is 4. I think they'll barely cover. But I think Golden State wins this one. I really do. And we're going to have a game 7. All bets are off because I'm just one of the mentality of the Raptors I don't know. I'm wondering how mentally tough they are going to be. They're 3-0 in that building, including regular season and playoffs. They can certainly win there. They already have.
Yeah.
And they've won all by double digits. All by double digits over Golden State. So the building is not, but this is different. I feel like this game, last game, that crowd is going to be going berserk the entire game.
I feel like the Raptors mentally are two different people. There's Kawhi Leonard, and then there's the rest of the team.
Two-faced, like the Batman character.
Exactly. I have no worries whatsoever about Kawhi Leonard's mental toughness, his emotional state, his fatigue. He is going to play, and he is going to have a very good game, and he's going to try and carry this team on his back. My question, are the other players, Lowry and
Siakam.
The string bean guy. Yeah, he's really good sometimes. Sometimes he's not. What kind of game is he going to give him tonight?
Koepka just drove the ball 328 yards.
All right, here's Tiger Woods for par from about par 20 to 25, I think.
You think?
Well,
yeah,
maybe,
I think you're
20.
Right. I thought 15. You're right. It's more like 20.
And
it's curling in. He got it.
Oh, my gosh. He nailed it. He saved par number 2.
And the screen just went off.
The screen goes blank. What happened? Now it's back.
So Fowler, Schauffele, Oosthuizen are all 5-under. Piercy is -4, 1 stroke back. McIlroy and a few others are at 3-under.
Wow, that's got to give you a little shot of adrenaline if you're Tiger. Well,
especially after the birdie putt he missed on the first hole by a dimple. Seriously, by one dimple.
It's incredible.
That would have gone in. He actually putted it in sideways when he did.
He tapped it in like a hammer.
Yeah. He couldn't believe it. He could not believe it. Ian Poulter now is at on the third hole. He's even. He's got 143 yards to the hole with his second shot. Very good position here for Senior Poulter.
Beautiful scenery.
Mm-hmm.
Got the ocean behind the crowd.
Cloudy.
Very overcast. June gloom going on in California.
It's like he's over the bunker.
He's eyeballing it.
And it hit the fringe of the green and the rough, and he's got a
60-footer.
That was not a good shot.
No bueno.
He wanted to have that release over that hill, and it never happened.
All right, here's Jordan Spieth. Putting for birdie. This is a tough angle. It's hard to see. Maybe this is
12?
At least 10 feet. Okay,
yeah.
12 feet. And
he got it.
Nailed it!
Jordan Spieth.
How about that?
One under.
So Tiger saves par on this hole. Jordan Spieth gets a birdie. He's one under.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A little smile, a little relief.
918 says, 910 about Draymond Green. Yes, getting technical. I think that's going to be big. I think he's going to have a great game, but he is going to be baited. There is no doubt. He has to be very, very careful with his status tonight because one technical and he's gone.
Yeah, yeah. Gone for game 7,
mm-hmm.
which we've seen that before. How'd that work out?
Not good. Not too good.
Exactly. All right. It's shaping up. Why is FS1 going to the showing highlights of the Women's Open from Charleston from last week?
Yeah. This is what Jeff was talking about. Look how crappy the fairways look.
It's burnt.
They're all burned.
So you see this burnt, dry, fast surface, and then you go back to Pebble Beach, and it's all moist and foggy and slow and all that kind of stuff.
But a record number of under par scores right now, which I don't like. So I'm expecting if Koepka shoots 10 under or better today, you know, you got to figure he's going to shoot at least 5 under. If these guys are shooting 5 under, what's he going to shoot?
Yeah,
the way he's playing, he's in a different zone right now.
I think the U.S. Open should be hard, and
I'm
okay with one ridiculously difficult major in out of the four. Right? I mean, I'm okay with that.
It's
I want them all to be different.
Where par means something, and right now, because of the whining and kvetching and moaning that all these players have talked about to the USGA the last several years, I think they have, and they made this an easy day, at least for day one. It could all change tomorrow, but these pin placements don't look all that tough to me. The weather's helping, certainly. The greens are softer because of the weather, but it doesn't look difficult to me. Today, this is the first time.
Relatively speaking, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen so many under par scores in my life in the U.S. Open in the first round this early.
All right, Jordan Spieth getting ready to tee off on number 3.
He's one under.
Yep.
He's got the driver.
Going with the big boy. This is an elevated tee as well.
Yeah, 274 to that bunker. He smashed. It's going right immediately. Takes one hand off the club.
This thing is out of control.
It's not even going to hit a bunker.
Bounces into the stands behind the ropes.
Somebody.
Yeah, it hit somebody. It hit him on a bounce.
He's in the thick
didn't hit him
second
on the fly.
Cut, too, that fluffy stuff we're talking about. Now, he's going to – and I haven't seen anybody today. Most of those shots you see, out of flop shots when they're near the green, this is going to be – he's going to be a couple – 270 to the green, and I don't know how he's going to hit it out of this.
Yeah.
He is in some deep doo-doo.
Justin Rose, who is also in their trio, he'll be teeing off here on the third. He's even so far as well. We really haven't mentioned him because it's all been with Tiger and Spieth.
060 says, every time I hear Ian Poulter and not a good shot, it brings me so much joy.
Why? I didn't know there were people that were anti-Ian.
Yeah, you're an anti-Ianite. Why is that?
Smitty texting in, these 9 p.m. NBA games kill me. I can't start eating buffalo chicken dip until late. Yeah, or I can't eat it that late. Yeah, I'll kick up on you.
This drive looks Rose. Very good by Justin Rose. Same hole. Might drift into the sand. No,
he's good.
Right down
he's
the
safe.
Middle. Right down the middle.
See,
very
this
good.
Is what Spieth's trying to do. He's trying to take a shortcut on this elevated dog leg and take the short way. And Rose was successful. Spieth was not. That means Tiger Eldrick is up next.
He's got like a hybrid. He's got a looks like
three,
a
three
what
wood?
Would be a three wood.
Yeah. All right.
And it's 412 yards, par three, par four, I should say. Excuse me. Be a hell of a long par three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's even so far on through three. And again, he missed a birdie putt by a dimple and then made a 21-footer to save par on two. So here he goes. Looks like a nice swing. He doesn't like it.
I think it's too far right.
Oh, he
does
like it. No, I think he does like it.
Is it?
Yeah. No, I think it's okay.
Okay.
Should be in the fairway.
Yep. Left it short, 250.
Yeah. But it's safe golf. It's smart golf.
Yeah. All right.
Right in the middle of the fairway.
Well, that's interesting because on the second hole, we just picked it up with his approach shot. We didn't see his drive. I wonder if he was short there as well.
Well, it wasn't good either way because he had his third shot was about 50, 60 yards off the green.
Out.
So
yeah.
Molinari is off to a good start. He's one under through four on the fourth hole, one under through three. He's 112 yards. Here's his second shot, and he is
nice spin back
absolutely
the
nailed
hole.
It
oh!
with the English. He's going to have a tad bit more than a tap in for par, but he should be two under in the next couple of minutes.
This is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Got some of the biggest names in the sport.
The English.
Really just teeing off now. I mean, you get to go home from work and watch this on a weeknight. We never get to do this.
I don't.
This is fantastic. What, are the Gatsby's booked for tonight as well?
Gatsby's are booked for a little bit.
Can we tell Miss Elaine that we want to hit the couch and chill out?
Miss Elaine and Miss Mary, unfortunately, Mr. Brian and myself, who want to watch golf, are going to be having dinner.
Well, maybe.
Hopefully we can see the TV.
Golf will be on where you're at.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've got to have that TV on. I know you.
Then we have to have conversation. I'm just kidding.
How was your day?
Fine. You know, it's just my busy time of month. Oh, my God. Where's he? Oh, okay.
Who is this?
This is from the 2018 U.S. Amateur, and it looks like he just climbed down a mountain. Who is that?
It looked like Rory, but it's not. I don't know who that is. Somebody,
that was an incredible shot they made from
Side of a cliff.
It is from the side of a cliff.
Literally.
Is that Rory when he was younger?
No.
An amateur? Who is that?
That's another. I don't know who that is because he is an amateur. I don't know who he is. All right. Fantastic.
Koepka, second shot. 64 yards to the hole, and he nails it. Not quite as good as
Molinari's is better.
Yeah, but he's got about a 15-footer for birdie.
Yeah. All right. On that note, let's squeeze in one last phone call before we hit it here. Let's 239-337-ESPN. Our friend Tiz in Fort Myers is on the line. Tiz, what's up?
Tiz!
Guys, what's going on, my friend?
What's happening?
What's on your mind?
First of all, thank you very much. Last week, you guys met my wife. That was a really cool experience for her and for me because I couldn't make it out there. That was awesome.
Oh, that was great.
Absolutely. She picked you up some swag, right? We gave her some stuff.
Yeah, I'm wearing a hat right now.
All right,
excellent.
Very good.
Excellent.
Craig, though, I have to call you out a little bit, bro.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Your golf coverage, every shot is like, whoa! And then it's like a 20-foot putt, you know? Like, come on.
Well, I mean, he makes a 20-foot putt. I am like, whoa, jealous.
Yeah, it was.
No, but I mean, even like the little chips, your woes a little too aggressive with the woes.
I'm an emotional sports watcher, Tiz.
He's so caught up in the stupid World Cup because he wants to yell goal.
Yeah, I prefer more goals than woes.
Absolutely right, Tiz.
That's all right. You're fine.
You guys are the best. I appreciate everything you guys do. You guys are the best.
All right, thanks, Tiz. All right, and tell your wife said hello.
Yeah,
all right, man.
Absolutely.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
Same to you.
Very much. Appreciate it.
Hovland, the amateur, is putting from about 11 feet, 9 inches. He's 200. This is for birdie. This is putting him at 300.
Well, that's pretty good. Let's watch this before we go to break. Come on. Let's eyeball it.
What's Hovland from? I can't see the flag. Is that Austrian? No, that's not Austrian. Is that...
I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
I think it's Sweden. Actually, I think it's Sweden.
We've had
Swedish.
An international incident already on this show today.
No,
can't risk another one.
We've already had, I can't remember, Straka. What's Straka? You've had him.
All right, here's your boy Hovland.
12-footer. For birdie.
Pushed it right.
Missed it.
All right, when we come back, we got what you got. Stay with us. It's Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Time for those parting shots. It's What You Got with Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN. Now, it's Sheeman and Shepherd.
And What You Got brought to you by Twin Peaks, best place for all things hoops, including the NBA Finals tonight. Get out down there, your favorite location.
Tiger Woods off for about 40 feet for birdie, just off the green, putting, and missed it by a lot.
Well,
a lot.
No bueno. Twin Peaks, eats, drinks, and scenic views. All right, while that's going on, this date in 2012, Giants pitcher Matt Cain tossed a perfect game against the Astros, giving San Francisco its first perfect game in history. By the way, Chuck Knoll left us on this date in 2014, by the way.
Wow.
Pete Shepard, what you got?
Well, Zach Ertz said it'd be a crime for them to take their foot off the gas. That's the Eagles superstar whose wife, Julie, is a stud in the U.S. women's national team, getting scorched earth on soccer critics who say Americans run up the score on Thailand. We all here don't think they did.
No.
It don't matter. They missed it. Alex Morgan and the U.S. ladies went off on the Thai team earlier this week and went World Cup opener, 113 zip. Slaughter was met with backlash from fans all over the globe, saying that the U.S. women's national team shouldn't have run up the score so badly on such an inferior squad. Ertz said to the group of reporters at his locker room yesterday that his wife and her teammates did absolutely nothing wrong. In fact, should have kept scoring more. First tie break in the World Cup, and the group stage is goal differential, so it would be a crime for them to take their foot off the gas. And not only that, I would think most teams... if I was on the Thai team, I wouldn't want them to take their foot off the gas. I would be embarrassed if they did. If they just sat out there, I mean, what do you want? So if they sat out there and time just ran out,
yeah.
Is that what you want?
No.
Is that, no, you don't want that.
It's very embarrassing.
No.
Very curious to see what the score will be in the Chile game this weekend, by the way. Rick Church, anything to add on your side of the glass, sir?
Just goodbye to the Oracle Arena, which I just found out is the oldest arena in the NBA, built in 1966.
Mm.
I was built in 1964, so there's a little perspective for you, Bonwow.
Yeah, that was built in 67.
The oldest arena in the NBA is 2 years younger than I am. So.
Wow, how about
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're really lucky they have a game there tonight anyways, so what a reprieve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Tiger has an 8-foot, 7-inch putt to save par here after he just, for his birdie attempt, just slightly off the green, whisked it by.
Let's watch this.
8 feet, 7 inches. Tiger to save par. Can he do it again?
Golf
2 in a
voices.
Row.
Yeah. Let's see. Here it is.
He got it.
Oh, my goodness.
He got it.
He is saving his bacon with these par shots. Mm. It's unbelievable. Wow.
Again, could have had birdie on one. Just missed by another, not even a rotation of the ball. Another dimple made. Mm. Would have put it in. But.
All right.
Still Fowler. Still Schauffele. Still
Oosthuizen.
Oosthuizen. All at 5-under, Percy at 4-under, McIlroy and a couple at 3-under.
All right, it's shaping up to be a good one. We've got the NBA game tonight,
yep.
8 o'clock pregame.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, Spain and company, I presume their lead story
yep.
will be previewing tonight's game, and then they get to the U.S. Open. Yes?
I don't think they will talk U.S. Open at all. And if they do, it'll be very generally about the low scoring maybe, but I don't think they'll get into it at all. You know they won't talk about hockey, so...
They should talk.
They should.
About
that's the best sports
seven.
Story of the year. It's the best sports story of the year for what the St. Louis Blues had to overcome.
But
what
being
they did.
That the NBA finals are on ESPN, yeah. That's what they'll leave.
That's what
tonight.
It'll be, and it'll probably be more about the Celtics, Lakers, New Orleans rumors, anything else
the
that's
trades.
Happened. Yeah,
okay.
The Zion Williamson story, which I didn't get into. They might get into that a little bit. He's suing a Florida company for trying to get out of a contract that he thinks they.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into it tomorrow.
All right, that's right. Tomorrow's Friday. For Rick Church and for Chris, for Pete Shepard, I'm Craig Sheeman, bringing my A-game, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, and God bless America!